The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is Tyler Higbee, and you're listening to Roster Watch. Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the Epic Roster Watch Podcast brought to you by RosterWatch.com. My name is Alex Dunlap here with Byron Lambert. Super excited to be back here with you as we have version 2.0 of the PPR Roster Watch cheat sheet now up at RosterWatch.com. And just coming out of Memorial Day, Byron, you'll notice, not at his general studio location, back in the great state of Texas. Byron, what the hell's going on, brother?
Oh, man, just visiting with the folks for a little bit here, celebrating the old 39th birthday, and met my brand new baby niece for a few minutes the other day. So staying busy, but trying to enjoy some time with everybody after it's been kind of a long run here. We haven't been able to see anybody. So
now you We have Sapper Stud in the comments saying something about Mike. I don't know if that's an issue. Let us know if that's an issue with one of our mics or whether what the hell you're trying to say there. Of course, we're streaming here on Periscope and on YouTube. If you're watching there, if you could please give us a thumbs up and leave a comment, we would certainly appreciate that. Make sure to like and subscribe there. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please. Leave us a rating and a review there. We'd be greatly appreciative of that as we tick up over 600, hopefully. We would like that. I think we're at like 596 right now. If we get above 600, I would go to bed tonight feeling super happy. Saberstud's saying no. He said that his boy Mike D signed in. So he's not talking about one of our mics. All right. Now, with that being said, we have version 2.0 of the cheat sheet now up and available. The magical, mythical Roster Watch cheat sheet available to our pro subscribers at RosterWatch.com. I am going to start off the pod by running a simulation because something has happened, Byron, with the Fantasy Pros Mock Draft Wizard that I know many people use. We certainly use it as a big tool as far as testing this thing because you can draft against – look at this, Byron. Look at what all we have down here. We now have ADPs pulled in from four different sites, plus the Fantasy Pros composite ADP. We have ESPN, we have Fantrax, we have RT Sports and Fantasy Football Calculator, as well as the best ball average draft position. So that's the best ball FFPC and best ball 10s. We also now, this is new today, the ESPN pre-draft rankings have been pulled in to this as well. So we are going to have to, this guy John Eason says, What's up, Adam and Byron?
Okay. What's up, John?
I figured my name would be easier to remember than yours, Byron. People always call you Byron or Brian. I've never had somebody mix up my name with an Alex and an Adam.
I had somebody call me Trash Man in the comments section.
You must have made you feel like shit. I would never want to be referenced as a Trash Man. All right, anyway, so a big deal here. We're getting it to where now we not only have the mock draft data here from Fantasy Pros, which really does help a lot, but we also have all these composite ADPs, the composite best ball ADPs, and now the pre-draft rankings at Yahoo and ESPN, the two biggest fantasy providers that. You know, when you're in your queue, the dumbasses in your league are going to be relying on that. So having to pull those things in pretty important whenever we look at it, look at an overall picture. I'll just do this first simulation here. I'll randomize my initial draft order to seventh. This will be a PPR snake draft with 12 teams. The starting rosters will have one quarterback, two running backs, two wide receivers, one tight end, and then two flex of either a wide receiver, running back, tight end, six bench spots. I'm not going to draft a kicker or defense. We will always just draft those two positions with our last two picks. And Byron, this could be a disaster because this has changed since the last time that I've run a mock. So maybe this will, you know, if this doesn't go well, it'll give us some things that we can concentrate on with the actual structure. So let's just get to it. We'll start at this mock draft. I'll use the 2.0 test one. And let's just see what happens here, Byron. You can tell me any thoughts that you have as we sort of go along here. We have some comments in the chat. John Ryan saying, "What's up, fellas? Appreciate your work. Helped me get the championship trophy last year. Love to hear it. Love to hear
already
it.
Already getting that thing shined up, buddy."
Yeah. Okay. So this is different. Pick seven. We're going to take Derrick Henry here at the very beginning. Rumblings with some in the fantasy community that Derrick Henry, running back two in standard leagues with some people's initial ranks. How would you feel about that?
To me, he seems like a guy who's maybe been a little bit undervalued so far in this process, this offseason, in a peculiar way.
We have generally not gotten a lot of this. So this draft is going to be different, I think, Byron, because I haven't gotten much of Derrick Henry. I haven't gotten much of this guy, Nick Chubb, either. So this could be the ESPN rankings coming in and sort of swindling some of our ADP stuff here. We'll just have to kind of see how it goes. Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb, though, certainly not a bad start here. Odell Beckham here with our third pick. This is probably not looking too bad. Chris Carson, a guy who we're going to have to kind of talk about here, whether we like in the mid fourth round quite as much as we talked about previously, just with some of the swirlings going around there with the signings of various players, et cetera, et cetera. We can talk about that later, whether or not we need to kind of bump him back down. But Chris Carson is your running back three. Certainly don't hate it. It looks like we're going to end up getting Terry. We would have a choice here between like a Terry McLaurin, Stephon Diggs, T.Y. Hilton. I'd actually like to write all those guys down. McLaurin, Diggs, and Hilton. Because with what's happened here, I think we need to have a conversation with those guys. Because in this situation, I'm not sure I would be taking Terry McLaurin here, even though the sheet is instructing me to do so. Let's see what we get next. It looks like we're going to be able to get Cam Akers as our number four running back here, which just feels like an absolute steal at this point. And we will get our number three wide receiver as just continuing to – we're getting so much Will Fuller. So much Will Fuller. When you can get him here in the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I mean, the mid-seventh round, it does feel incredibly good to get him there. And we're backfilling – the sheet is helping us with backfilling some of these wide receivers – because we're going to end up getting Darius Slayton here. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like Keyshawn Vaughn is going to continue following to us here in the eighth round, and that's unfortunate. We made a promise to ourselves, Byron. We remember we were not going to get too high on that guy. That's another guy I'd like to just write down and see where you're exactly comfortable with, because that's changed. This is great to get Deontay Johnson here at – where was that? Was that the ninth – end of the ninth round – or kind of mid-end ninth round. I mean, you're hearing people start to talk about him like he is there are some bold takes out there with people talking about that they like Deontay Johnson next year better than Juju Smith-Schuster. Deontay Johnson earlier this week telling reporters that he was injured starting in week two of last season. Looks like we're going to take a flyer here on CeeDee Lamb, not getting a lot of him, but this is just – I guess this is just what happens whenever these – whenever these drafts have sort of changed up here a little bit. Preston Williams. Look at this. This is interesting. Austin Hooper falls here at the very end. And I don't like Austin Hooper. We've not been getting that much of him. We have a choice, though, between him and Aaron Rodgers. Would you rather just take the quarterback here, or would you think that Rodgers might fall? And if we don't get him, we at least get some other kind of, you know, Carson Wentz or, you know, Matt Ryan, Matt Stafford, something like that.
I'd consider passing on both, but if it's between those two, I'd probably take Rodgers.
I think I'm going to take Hooper and just see what we get left with it. Yeah, because if we do that, we can just get Carson Wentz here. I'm fine with that. And then just take a flyer here at the very last pick and go with Mr. N'Keal Harry. So that team, it looks like with the ESPN stuff getting pulled in, there could be some of those mid-round running backs might need to get pulled up a little bit. Some running backs in the area of Odell Beckham and DJ Moore might need to get sort of pulled up a little bit because, while I love the four running backs that I have, Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb, Chris Carson, Cam Akers, I don't want to be like, I feel like with these teams, the structure of these teams, we need five running backs for this structure. We didn't end up getting it. So that's just going to require more testing. Like we always say, the sheet is a living, breathing document. We continue to work on it. Now that we have ESPN pre-draft rankings being pulled in, that's obviously thrown a small bit of a wrench and a little bit of the structure in those parts that we've mentioned. I want to get back to those parts. But before we do, I know that you were doing simulations. You've been taking some notes. Let's get to some of your thoughts, concerns, ideas. And then I can kind of get back to you about my two specific questions that I made note of just during that simulation.
Well, I mean, first things first, I think that's a pretty nice haul in that simulation.
Yeah, I do too. I just here. I mean, let's just read it over again because that people might not. I mean, it's not bad. I mean, Carson. So the running backs are Derrick Henry, Nick Chubb, Chris Carson, Cam Akers. The wide receivers are Odell Beckham, Terry McLaurin, Will Fuller, Darius Slayton, Deontay Johnson, CeeDee Lamb, Preston Williams, N'Keal Harry. The tight end is Austin Hooper. The quarterback is Carson Wentz. The structure of this sheet with the addition of the ESPN pre-draft rankings needs to bump a few of these running backs up in the Odell Beckham area of the sheet and also in the Darius. Like we need to get like guys like Keyshawn Vaughn or some of these guys who are these values that we were taking. Darius Geis needs to come up to where Darius Slayton is. I would have liked to have taken Darius Geis instead of Darius Slayton. That would have made I could actually go back and do that.
Interesting you say that because we've touched on so many guys here that I wanted to talk about today just in the course of this one simulation. I actually think Geis currently might be a guy that we're a little bit too high on. And you know, and then I look at this, Alex, if you start pushing all those running backs up, it appears to me like we would have come away fairly thin at wide receiver unless you plan on pushing wide receivers up at other junctures in the draft. Now, to me, the only area here where I would have tried to exercise some personal discretion is since you had Chubb already, I think with Beckham on the in the queue, I probably would have just pivoted to the next wide receiver on the list behind Beckham.
That's another thing. I'm sorry. I just had another thought I was going to ask you, but
to kind of divvy things up there so I don't have too much exposure to Cleveland. And, of course, I think the same thing could have applied to Hooper there a little bit later, Alex. But as you mentioned, I've been running some simulations and just taking some general notes. Today I wanted to get to some tight end talk and some value wide receiver talk. Like I mentioned, unfortunately, a lot of these players just came into discussion right here in this simulation to open the podcast. So I think first things first, a little bit of house cleaning. Let's begin, Alex. You teased it. I mean, how much does the signing of Carlos Hyde affect Chris Carson? I mean, Carlos Hyde is returning from a torn labrum. Reports are that he should be ready, you know, by the early portion of the season. So I guess my question is, especially in the PPR format, since this is the PPR cheat sheet, Alex, is the signing of Carlos Hyde enough to slide Le'Veon Bell ahead of him, given how much hype Le'Veon and lip service Le'Veon's been giving to the Jets' new interior offensive line recently, you know, in addition to signing Beckton and the PPR format here. Also with the idea that we've started to get more bullish on the Seahawks wide receivers versus ADP tells me that we don't want to get too low on Carson, but tells me we should consider sliding Le'Veon over Chris Carson at this point.
Yes, we should. Absolutely. I'm going to start the 2.1 update right now because there are some changes that I need to make. And when I do that, we're going to move Le'Veon. The only question is, it made me feel like shit just there to take Chris Carson. So we're going to get him down. Would you rather have What would you do if a decision came down to Le'Veon Bell, AJ Brown, or Patrick Mahomes? Does that seem sensible?
Yeah, I would take Bell or Mahomes. A reminder, too, since we're talking about the PPR sheet here, Alex, Le'Veon Bell in 15 games played last year, 78 receptions. We've got to remember that so much of the Jets' season was derailed by Darnold missing the first portion of the season with the mono, and then the offensive line was bad. I really do think we might get the bounce on these Jets, specifically Le'Veon Bell, a little bit this year. So I think when we're talking PPR, this is a sound strategic move to go ahead and push him up over Chris Carson with this news of the recent signing of Carlos Hyde there in Seattle.
All right, that makes sense. And also with the it's not just Carlos Hyde, right? What bothers us about Carlos Hyde being signed is what the team is telling us about what they feel about Chris, about the health of Chris Carson and Rashad Penny. I'm not necessarily worried about I probably am a little bit worried about just the body, the man, Carlos Hyde, you know, him taking a little bit of work away. What's most concerning to me about Carlos Hyde signing, though, is the fact that they likely would not have done that if there wasn't some shred of concern about the depth that they're going to have at running back. And if there's concern about the depth they're going to have at running back, that doesn't bode well for dude coming off. What was it, a hip injury that he had? Chris Carson, was it a hip?
I don't know. I think that's more a reflection of the situation with Penny. But we saw at the end of the year, they want a little bit of a committee. I mean, Penny started to get some action there before he got hurt. If Hyde is the guy that he was last year, I mean, I think the Seahawks have every intention as the season progresses to get both those guys involved. So Carson would still be the lead guy. Now, I think you can make the argument Carson comes out of the gate hot and fast early in the season. We like fast starters. That said, we're not going to get too low on Chris Carson. You get him as RB3 in these simulations. That's just fine. I just think when we're talking PPO, we're talking about 70.
You want Le'Veon
season last year. It's time to slide Le'Veon Bell up just a hair.
He should have been all along. And as long as we're just talking about that part of the sheet, I didn't like taking Odell Beckham there over DJ Moore. Do you think DJ Moore should be ranked ahead of Odell Beckham straight up?
Not sure, man. I'd probably still take Odell there, given if I hadn't already drafted Nick Chubb, I would have been just fine sliding to Moore if that was the, you know, since I'd already had Chubb, I want to make a little executive decision there not to have too much exposure to the Browns. I worry a little bit about DJ Moore with Bridgewater and Robbie Anderson and Curtis Samuel. McCaffrey soaks up a lot of targets. I don't know. I think putting Robbie Anderson in that mix muddies the water a little bit for DJ Moore.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, and it is Odell Beckham.
And you're still worried about a slow recovery. We'll talk about Jarvis a little bit later, but I know you're still worried a little bit about a slow recovery there for Jarvis. To me, that points to potential early season, prosperous start for Odell Beckham in Cleveland. I mentioned I had a little bit of tight end talk I wanted to get to today, Alex, specifically maybe kind of like mid-round and value tight end talk. So, I mean, let's begin. How confident are you in Hunter Henry this season, Alex? He's never played a full season. He missed all of 2018. Now we've got Tyrod Taylor and a highly drafted rookie quarterback who's almost, certain to see some action this year at the helm there at the quarterback situation with the Chargers. I mean, truly, how confident are you in Hunter Henry this year?
I'm not confident in anybody on the Chargers. I'm not even that confident in Austin Eckler. I'm not confident in any of them. I don't think I've gotten a single Charger in any simulation that I've done all this whole time. Have you ever gotten a Charger? I've maybe got Mike Williams once or twice in like the 10th round.
Looking forward to speaking about that maybe a little bit later. I actually don't hate that super late. I haven't gotten many Chargers. I still like Eckler, and that's just going to depend on his ADP. But yeah, I'm very cool. I'm tepid on Hunter Henry. That's not a tight end I'm really that interested in going kind of mid round in on. I don't feel like that's
I don't either. Pick in I don't either. Right. All right. So, I mean, I don't need to move any of these other guys up. But in that same tier, I'm just going to move Hunter Henry to the bottom, and we can just, because we've been getting plenty you know, if it gets to, let's say it gets to round, round seven, round eight turn, right? We can then, if we're looking at the wide receivers, if Deontay Johnson is off the board, and if, you know, maybe around the time CeeDee Lamb starts going off the board like we took earlier, if there is an Evan Engram, a Tyler Higbee around that spot, we've been getting them. Whereas if where we had Hunter Henry ranked or placed on the sheet in relation to those guys, we never got Hunter Henry anyway. So I don't think we need to bump those dudes up. But I certainly like around, you know, if Evan Engram, Tyler Higbee fall around the 7-8 turn, if Rob Gronkowski and Jared Cook keep falling to like the 8-9 turn, which I mean,
those are the two guys I actually kind of may prefer at value there. So this is a great segue, Alex, and you mentioned him. How worried are we that Tyler Higbee's big run occurred last year with Gerald Everett on the sidelines, who's now back in the fold for at least one more season? And Gerald Everett had three double-digit target games himself last year where he went on a bit of a tear weeks 4 through 7. You know, we're hearing that with Brandon in the post-Brandon Cooks era, there's going to be more 12 personnel with the Rams this season. Higbee was 11 targets per game in weeks 13 through 17 last year to finish the season. It was a five-week span of double-digit fantasy scoring. But
where he looked like the best tight end in the league for a while. He looked like the new Gronk.
Yeah. Type, right? Yeah. During, you know, but to be fair, Gerald Everett basically missed all of the games during that stretch, with the exception of registering one target in week 16 versus San Francisco in a game where Higbee still had pretty nice production. So I guess the question is, can Tyler Higbee flourish while these two tight ends coexist in Los Angeles? You know, are we confident that Gerald Everett takes a back seat this year? I'm not so sure with all the rumblings of the 12 personnel and down Brandon Cooks. You know, that the McVay didn't give us quite the endorsement at the combine that we would have liked to have had in terms of Higbee being in that Travis Kelce, you know, elite echelon. So I guess, you know, the more I think about it, I might like Higbee a little bit more in dynasty, where Everett is a free agent this coming offseason and where the team will have an out on Higbee, but he'll still be under contract. I just think there's a really important dynasty tight end situation to monitor. And it just raises the question for me. I mean, how worried are we that Tyler Higbee's big fantasy tear occurred last year with Gerald Everett sidelined, who it appears to be healthy, and with all the talk of 12 personnel being the heavy, you know, the favorite package there in Los Angeles this year, Alex?
Well, just let me hand it back to you. You're the pricing king. So what percentage likelihood do you place on the idea that Tyler Higbee could be, you know, maybe 80 to 85% of Tyler Higbee could basically be what he was? I don't think it would be sustainable for him to go a whole season being as good as he was to end last year. I'm not sure that he's one of the most talented tight ends in the league, right? But maybe something close to it, right? If he could be something close to that, what is your percentage chance that you think that he could have a season like that, barring injury? Is it a 25%?
No.
30%? 50? No,
50, I'd say a solid 50%.
If you're telling me I have a 50% chance of getting a Travis Kelce or a George Kittle at the 7-8 turn, we need to keep fucking trying to get Tyler Higbee as much as we can.
To your point, I mean, the more I analyze it, I just thought to myself, you're not sure, and there's definitely concerns, but I think Tyler Higbee's just one of those guys you're going to have to take the risk on this
year. I've seen it. I've seen it for multiple weeks in a row where he was winning people DFS tournaments. He was helping win people fantasy championships, especially in tight end premium. I mean, I've seen it. He can do it. The fans have seen it. The coaches have seen it. So, you know, it isn't like I'm betting completely on the come here. So if we think it's a 50-50 shot that he could be like that again, yeah, dude, round eight. Yeah, dude, we should be more aggressive on the guy.
Well, I think you need to make sure you're getting him at value. But if that opportunity presents itself, I do believe you'll have to take your chances with Tyler Higbee at that point. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe cooled a little bit, but still very, very interested. Okay, next guy on the list here, Alex, Mike Gesicki down in Miami, 7+ targets per game, basically down the stretch last year. Seems like he's pretty high on like that lower tier of tight ends on the sheet, and we're getting Fitzpatrick back. We may have rookie quarterback action this year. We had the viral social media video from Gesicki here this last week of an insane theatrical catch he made there in his own driveway at home. How do you feel about Mike Gesicki coming off, again, a stretch at the end of the season last year, whereas he was a 7+ target per game guy? Can we believe in Mike Gesicki in that weird situation in Miami?
Sure. Well, it's just like these other guys, man. Like you look at the tight end position and you have Kelce, you have Kittle from last year, you know, that you can project moving forward, feeling totally safe with. Austin Hooper, who was sort of right there with them last year, you can't feel as safe with because he's in an all new situation now that he's in Cleveland and out of Atlanta. Zach Ertz feels like Zach Ertz is in such an awkward place ADP wise to where I will never take Zach Ertz. I worry too much about Dallas Goedert. I worry too much about the fact that volume might not continue to be there for him with the new pass catchers that they've added, with Miles Sanders' role growing there as a pass catcher out of the backfield, et cetera, et cetera. And then besides Darren Waller and maybe to some degree Evan Engram, you forget since he only played 8 games last year, but you forget he was basically about a 14-point-per-game guy, right, in PPR. So outside of those guys – I mentioned Mark Andrews, right? Mark Andrews?
I don't think I did. Still pretty interested in Mark Andrews.
Yeah. So basically, if you don't get one of those top 6 to 7, I honestly think that, you know, when you start looking at these other guys like the Hunter Henrys, the Jared Cooks, the Tyler Higbees, you know, guys that could come on in better situations this year, guys like maybe a clearly a guy like Gronkowski, clearly a guy like, you know, Jonnu Smith, Noah Fant. I honestly think that Mike Gesicki might have the profile of a guy that I'm more interested in than a lot of those guys, besides maybe Tyler Higbee, especially with where we're getting him right now. I'm getting him in simulations a ton, and let me look at where he is on the cheat sheet. He is priced in to be taken. I don't know what off the top of my head. Hold on. He's priced in to be taken. Gesicki. Pick 120. Pick 10.08 or something in a 12-team league. 10.08. That's late. I mean, you only have like 3 more picks left before you take a kicker in a defense.
I think he's a super interesting, you know, a conversation point in this draft because how excited can you be about buying into the Dolphins offense?
Gesicki is explosive, man.
And on the other hand, I mean, that's pretty big news. Seven targets a game down the stretch last year. I think that's – now, that was Preston Williams, you know, was down a little bit because of the knee injury there towards the end. But that's a pretty big run on Gesicki. So another guy that, you know, obviously question marks, but I think that's a fairly calculated risk. You can take it tight end that has some upside a little bit later. Now, I'll tell you, Alex, you mentioned it.
But people should just know why we like Mike Gesicki. I mean, he's 6'6", 250 pounds, and he runs a 4.5 40, and he has he's got a 99th percentile. I'll pull up a player profiler. Okay, 96th percentile 40, a 95th percentile speed score, a 99th percentile burst score, 99th percentile agility score, and 100th percentile catch radius, along with a young breakout age.
I believe we scouted Gesicki at, didn't we see him in Mobile?
Was he at the Senior Bowl, or was it somebody, Mike Gesicki? If he was, he should probably didn't
like him. We liked him just generally as a prospect. You know,
I remember we talked about him.
That was a thin tight end class.
Gesicki, number 80. Yeah. Number 88 at the Senior Bowl that year.
So he had a good Senior Bowl too. That's why he's been on our radar for a while. Now you mentioned him, Alex.
Was that the 2018 Senior Bowl? Let me look. I just saw a photo of him.
17 or 18.
It was a 2017 season, 2018 Senior Bowl. Okay. Yeah.
Another tight end you mentioned, Alex. You know that I'm one of the industry's biggest fans just in terms of talent. And I even had an eye on him last year as a rookie. That's Noah Fant there in Denver. But my question to you is, he was basically a 3-target-per-game guy last season, and now we've got Hamler, Judy, all these other folks coming into the mix there in Denver. I know we're expecting a leap for Drew Locke, but don't you think maybe Noah Fant should come down a little bit, 3 targets per game last season?
Yeah, I mean, where do I if Noah Fant is up higher than you think he should be, Byron, I feel the same way as you do, and I probably hate him even more than you because I didn't like him as a prospect as much as even you did. And I certainly didn't. I certainly don't like the situation there. And Denver, what I like about Denver is the fact that they've surrounded Drew Locke with all these great weapons, right? So I like Drew Locke, but it's a situation where I'm not necessarily interested in buying into any of those weapons just by themselves. It's like a la carte pieces. I'd rather just get them all with Drew Locke. And here's the other thing that you know, Albert O is. I mean, he'll already have a built-in rapport with Drew Locke whenever he comes in. That's a really – talk about athletic specimens at the tight end position when we just talked about Mike Gesicki. Albert O out of Missouri, Drew Locke's old teammate, that guy, his speed scores and his agility and burst scores and everything like that are just as good as Mike Gesicki's. He's that same kind of athlete. So it isn't only Hamler and Judy and the fact that Courtland Sutton's still there and the fact that Drew Locke could still suck. I mean, it's the fact that also you got another guy coming into that tight end room who's athletic and who's good. So if I rarely get Noah Fant, if it'll make you feel better to get him down, I can get him. I can move him down. I don't give a shit. Like we're not getting any of him. So yeah, I'll just move him down.
I think you bake all that in 3 targets a game last year and you got to pull the plug on Noah Fant.
That's fine.
At this point of the draft season. I'll tell you what, Alex, I got a few more tight ends
in this situation. All right. So in this same tier, are you going to talk about TJ Hawkinson at all?
Of course, you know I always talk about TJ Hawkinson.
Okay, well then I'll just ask you whenever you bring
him up. No podcast is complete without me pounding the table for TJ Hawkinson. So,
and that's one of the reasons I didn't like Noah Fant that much is because I said, dude, I just said if there are two of these tight ends coming from this school, like
you want all the Hawkinson.
I just give me Hawkins. I just thought Hawkinson was so much better, and maybe that was just sort of the reason why I.
Well, he was as
artificially sort of deflated, my opinion.
A big play guy, but he was just even a nasty blocker, just a better prototypical. Seriously, TJ Hawkinson, the best tight end prospect that we've ever evaluated coming out since we've been doing this.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's been a long time.
Here's the thing is like you got to remind yourself of those things. You got to put a pin in that and remember that the next year and the next year and stuff like that. Like those are things you can't let yourself forget. Because especially the tight end position, we've just seen the development there at that position. We've been talking about this ever since we started local radio in Austin, Texas, and in Central Texas, and then eventually after we got syndicated and then on to Sirius. It's like we've been saying it the whole time. We've been saying this for 11 years. When you're a tight end, you have to learn in the quarterback room. You have to learn in the tight end room. You have to learn in the wide receiver room, and you need to learn the calls from the offensive line and the offensive line room. It's a lot to take in. It's probably the hardest position to take in on offense outside of the quarterback for a rookie. So we just got to keep reminding ourselves when we give these tight ends good evaluations. We did it with Gesicki. We did it with TJ Hawkinson. It's why these are players that we will be focused on now as they could possibly be coming into their own. And even though with Hawkinson, we're only talking about year 2, he's the kind of prospect where, I mean, we saw enough in one game out of Hawkinson last year versus Arizona to say that, you know, he's the kind of prospect that can kind of bend that curve a little bit and be able to be ready in more of a 2-year timetable than a 3 to 4 year timetable that we would usually expect.
Yeah. And it's easy to forget. We'll probably maybe get to this in the next podcast, that all those arrows in Detroit start pointing back to Matthew Stafford, who, like I said, easy to forget. I think in 6 out of his 8 games he played last year, he was a top 6 fantasy quarterback. So, you know, if you jog your memory on that, you think about how good of a prospect Hawkinson is. Look, I mean, we're talking about Hawkinson. Let me just finish. I mean, I ran a poll on Twitter yesterday about TJ Hawkinson's prospects for the 2020 season. 10% folks voted that he would be a top 5 tight end in 2020.
65% in fantasy. Yeah,
That's what was implied. 65% of the vote went to TJ Hawkinson as a top 10 tight end in 2020. And then a 25% of the vote went to TJ Hawkinson as a bust. So I think you bake all that in, you have tight end 18 on the sheet who, you know, is really shaping up to be, you know, more than likely, at least the sentiment industry wide, a top 12 tight end with that mega top 5 upside.